This is Progressive Radio, a weekly conversation hosted by Matthew Rothschild, editor of The Progressive Magazine, a leading voice for peace and social justice. For more information about Progressive Radio or The Progressive Magazine, log on to our website at progressive.org.
I'm Matt Rothschild, and welcome to Progressive Radio, which you can also grab off our website over at progressive.org. Today, it's a great honor to have in the studio with me none other than Cindy Sheehan, the peace activist who almost single-handedly rekindled the anti-war movement in America. Now she's running against Nancy Pelosi. Cindy Sheehan, welcome to Progressive Radio.
It's great to be here, Matt. Thanks.
It's wonderful. Wonderful finally to meet you in person after all those emails.
Yeah, it sure is, huh?
Tell me what it's been like for you over the last couple of years, seeing your engagement in this anti-war movement, you know, just kind of take off. Were you active before?
I started becoming active after Casey was killed. Even though my family, Casey, none of us agreed with the war, George Bush, I wasn't an active anti-war activist. So, but after Casey was killed, I just became more plugged in to trying to study about it, read everything I could. And then I joined Military Families Speak Out. Then I founded Gold Star Families for Peace. And then everybody knows when I went to Crawford, Texas.
Now, how'd you get the idea to do that?
It was August 3rd of 05. I was at home, and there was a report on the news that 14 Marines were killed in one incident. Well, the day before, there was 7 Marines from the same unit killed in an incident. And I was just typing my frustration about that, and because I had been active for over a year since Casey was killed. We did the Downing Street Minute hearings on June 16th, 05. Like I said, I founded Gold Star Families for Peace. I was writing. I was really active. And I didn't feel like what I was doing was making an impact. And I was just really frustrated with the lack of, seeming lack of compassion in the American public, the lack of any kind of truth being told in the media, in the mainstream media. So I was typing my frustrations, and I had an idea. I was going to Dallas, Texas the next day to go to the VFP convention, and I knew George Bush was on vacation because I saw him from Texas speaking about the loss of life those past 2 days without, acknowledging it. He just said, the families of the fallen can rest assured their loved ones died for a noble cause. So I said, well, that did it. I'm going down to Crawford, and I'm going to get as close as I can to his ranch, wherever Crawford is, wherever his ranch is, and I'm going to ask him what noble cause. And I typed that in an email I was writing and sent it out, and I think at that time I had a list of about 300 people that I sent emails to, and by the time I got home from an event I went to in Sacramento, my box was filled with over 1,000 responses, and it was like, wow, people were really energized by that. And so then I was there. That happened August 3rd. August 6th, I was in Crawford.
And were you surprised at the turnout that built there in Crawford? Because when you got there, there weren't that many. I mean, it was you and how many people?
Well, the first day when we did the action walking from what became Camp KC-1, we tried to walk up to the checkpoint. We were stopped about a half a mile down the road. We had about 75-100 people and about the same amount of media. It was pretty crazy. And that first night, there was only 7 people who spent the night. And then by the end of Camp Casey on August 31st, we had almost 15,000 people from around the world. I couldn't keep up with my email. I had 6 people going through my email every day, volunteers around the country. And we got 30,000 pieces of snail mail in Crawford. So I was pretty overwhelmed and, I was grateful but not surprised because I could see this tension building up in the country. I was out speaking 3 weeks out of the month around the country, and people were just, but what can we do? What can we do? And I think that was just something that caught people's imagination. It gave people a focus. For many people, it was the first time they ever heard voice in opposition to the war, especially, you know, the voice of a grieving mother. So, yeah, it was pretty amazing.
Were you surprised Bush didn't meet with you?
No. I didn't think he would, but I recognize the fact that it would be better if he didn't meet with me, because I didn't even know I was going to stay there until I got to Dallas. And somebody said, well, what are you going to do if he doesn't meet with you? I said, well, then I'm just going to sit down and I'm not going to move till he meets with me or until he leaves. And I remember his response was like, wow, that's an action. But, you know, if he met with me that first day, I would have, you know, written about the meeting, how I thought he, whatever happened, and it just would have, you know, gone away. But by not meeting with me, I think was what really ignited a lot of people, and it brought a lot of people to Crawford. And even people who were Republicans and agreed with the war said, well, we can't believe that he wouldn't meet with, you know, a grieving mother. So,
so it was that arrogance and disdain that he exhibited that helped get things going, you think?
Well, I think so. I think, I don't know if we would be sitting here right now if he had met with me that first day. And I don't know if 2/3 or 3/4 of the country would be against the war now and against the policies of George Bush. And I think we might be a little further along, but I think that really catapulted the movement and catapulted or awakened, I think, on many Americans who all they saw was about the war was on cable news.
Matt Rothschild, you're listening to Progressive Radio. I'm speaking, of course, with Cindy Sheehan. Cindy, what does it mean when 2/3 of the American public is against the war and yet the war and the surge goes on?
I think it means that what our country was founded on, which is being a representative republic, has, you know, transformed into a country or a government by, instead of by and for the people, by and for the corporations, the special interests. I think that are both parties, most of the people in both parties are very similar in their ideologies. They're very similar in the people who pull their strings, the people who fund their campaigns. And so I think that our government, and, you know, with most of the people's consent, by their silence, we're sliding into a form of fascism. And I think that is, it's corporate, you know, Benito Mussolini famously said, it's when corporations and government, it's the merger of those two interests. And, you know, I think that's what we have right now.
How do we stop that slide, reverse that slide?
Well, I think we have to take back our government. We have to take back our representative republic. On July 23rd, I went with Ray McGovern and Reverend Lennox Yearwood to meet with John Conyers about impeachment. We took a petition with over 1 million signatures. We had 300 people lining the halls by his office on Capitol Hill. And while we were there, there was a call every 30 seconds demanding impeachment. And John Conyers said, I can't do it. And I said, well, so what you're telling me is we, the people, have no voice in our government. We have no recourse. He said, yes, you do, in the ballot boxes. But when the candidates we vote for are the ones that the, you know, the elite, the corporate elite pick for us and the media picks for us, and they don't do what the people want them to do, what kind of representative republic do we have? So I think that we have to challenge this, you know, two-party system, which really is just one party, basically. People have to challenge their Congress people, like I'm challenging Nancy Pelosi. And I think challenging her as an independent, unaffiliated with any party, that you can truly look at the human and not the politics, you know, what would be right for me politically or what would make me more money, but look at a human being and say, what would be best for humanity? What would be best for our country, and not what's best for myself and my own interests or the people who owns me interests? So I think that by challenging her, I'm not just challenging Pelosi, I'm challenging the system, and I'm challenging the military-industrial complex that I think controls our system.
Cindy Chan, why do you think John Conyers told you that, you know, he couldn't do it? Because the time before in Congress, when the Democrats weren't in control, he did introduce a bill to explore grounds of impeachment.
This is just so puzzling to so many people, especially people who have been impeachment anti-war activists. A lot of people in the movement don't link impeachment with peace, but, you know, there's many of us who do, because first of all, there's a thing of accountability. And second of all, George Bush has said the troops aren't coming home while he's president. And, you know, if Nixon had been held accountable for the, you know, the prosecuting of Vietnam and for the illegal bombings of Laos and Cambodia, I think it will rein in future presidents. But John Conyers wrote a book called The Constitution in Crisis. And he and his staff laid out the crimes and the charges against George Bush. And in my many meetings with him since they became in the majority, I've said, you know, Congressman, what happened? Are all of a sudden, are they like innocent of these crimes? You know, you have to put them to trial. You have to give them a hearing. And there's been a lot of speculation that Nancy Pelosi, and we know she did, because before they were even elected, she said impeachment's off the table. And we think that Nancy Pelosi is reining his hand in. And, you know, he keeps saying, I don't have the votes. Well, you're not going to have the votes if you don't put the resolution for impeachment out there. And we think it's a constitutional duty. We think it's mandatory. And he thinks he has discretion. And one thing he told me that broke my heart, because I really have admired him even before I knew him, even before, you know, my son was killed, I admired him. And he told us that it's more important for him to have a Democratic president than to end the war. So what the Democratic leadership are doing are playing politics with our flesh and blood, and the people of Iraq and our soldiers are being put in the middle of this political struggle. And I think it's inherently immoral.
I mean, that is when I'm most cynical. I think the Democrats want the war to go on.
They absolutely do. And another congresswoman that I'm not going to mention her name, but she's always been 100% right on the war. She's a friend of mine. She told me, she said, Cindy, I go to these speaker meetings in Nancy's office, and all they do is talk about the war in political terms. Not once does anybody mention how much more heartache we're going to cause if this war continues. And
so they're no different than Bush.
They're not any different than the Republicans. And now we see them coming back, and Harry Reid's all like, well, we can't end the war because, you know, during the break I tried to get Republicans on our side. Well, you know, damn it, why don't you get all the Democrats on your side before you try and use the excuse of it's the Republicans' fault? When the Democrats came into power and when they gave George Bush billions of more dollars for the war, they bought the war. The blood is on their hands now.
Mario Cuomo said the war is a gift. That's about as obscene as you can get, isn't it? Do you want to explain your reasons for running against Nancy Pelosi? Is it the impeachment? Is it the war? Is it a combination? What is it?
Well, of course, since the Democrats regained both houses, you know, I have been very leery about if they would, you know, finally become the opposition party to the Republicans. And I saw my worst suspicions confirmed. I've seen them confirmed this entire year since January, when I and about 75 other people interrupted Rahm Emanuel's press conference when he was talking about ethics reform, and we started saying, investigate, de-escalate, troops home now. I think that's the people's agenda. I think that's why the Democrats were put back into power, was to be an opposition party to the Bush regime, not to rubber stamp, not to give him more money to wage his illegal and moral war, not to legalize and legitimize his crimes. They just made one of his crimes, impeachable offenses, legal right before they went on break. And that's a warrantless wiretapping and spying on Americans. So when we decided to do this Journey for Humanity, we were going to leave Crawford on July 10th, our birthdays. And by the time we got to Washington, D.C., I just said, if impeachment's not back on your table, then I'm going to run against you. Because if you won't hold George Bush accountable, I'll hold you accountable. And I really think, like I said before, I think it's not just me against Pelosi, but, you know, it's the Constitution against Pelosi. It's the people against Pelosi. It's democracy against Pelosi. So it was another one of, a lot of people don't believe this, but August 3rd, 2005, when I decided to go to Crawford, was totally spontaneous. People look at the success and they say, well, there must have been somebody. You must have had George Soros behind you. You must have had Michael Moore behind you.
This is Bill O'Reilly saying you're just a tool.
Yeah, so, and that's very insulting to me, too, that, you know, just me, a poor grieving mother female from California couldn't, you know, have the, or pull anything like this off. So, just one day when we were planning for the caravan, I just had this idea, you know, and it was another spontaneous spur of the moment idea. But after I had it and after we challenged her, I thought that it was really pretty brilliant, because Nancy Pelosi and many people across America don't realize this, but she's very vulnerable in California's 8th district. She has not represented that district for years. You know, she's been so busy consolidating power. You know, yay for you, Nancy. You're the first female speaker of the House, but you haven't used that power to represent your constituency or represent the people, the majority of the people of America. So, and then San Francisco is very progressive. San Francisco has people who are very politically sophisticated. They understand that, yes, we need to impeach George Bush and Dick Cheney. Yes, we need to end this war. But that's only putting a Band-Aid on the problem, that they understand the deeper issues of imperialism and corporatism and empire, which are the underlying, the root cause of George Bush, the root cause of the war in Iraq. And if we don't solve the root cause, we're just going to, you know, perpetuate these problems, you know, ad infinitum. They're never going to stop. So I think that it really is a brilliant strategy. And I really think that I have an excellent chance, because 2/3 of San Francisco want George Bush and Dick Cheney impeached. At least 80% want the troops to come home. And they feel as betrayed by her and by the Democratic leadership as probably more than the rest of the country.
So are you running to raise these underlying issues, or do you think you can win?
I think I can win. I really do. There's a lot of energy, you know, not just all over the country, but in California 8th District. And I'm not coming in as an unknown. I'm not coming in as someone who has not already done a lot of work in San Francisco and in the area. That's where I'm from. So I think that it's going to be a successful campaign, not only by raising these issues on a national level. You know, if I just challenge people, like, why don't you challenge a Republican? Why don't you challenge a blue dog Democrat? You know, why don't you do this? Well, I think that it wouldn't get the national attention that these very important issues need to have.
I'm speaking, of course, with Cindy Sheehan. I'm Matt Rothschild. You're listening to Progressive Radio. Cindy Sheehan, a few months ago, you sent a famous email around to the progressive community and the people on your email list and to the media announcing your resignation as the face of the anti-war movement. And then you've come back. Do you want to explain what happened?
Well, I was always going to come back, but I was going to come back in a humanitarian role, which we have done. My organization, Camp Casey Peace Institute, and Reverend Lennox Yearwood's Hip Hop Caucus, we've kind of merged to form an organization called People for Humanity. And our first activity was to go to Amman, Jordan, and work with Iraqi refugees and really find out what the problem is, what they think the solution is. And we're forming these alliances with the Iraqi refugees to help get them their very basic urgent needs of food, medical care, lodging, schooling, relocation. But the thing that we have to work together with them the most is ending the occupation and stabilizing their country so they can go home. And then we're going to be doing some work again around Guantanamo in the near future. But so I was always going to come back. I was not going to come back only 5 weeks after I retired. But what really propelled me back into things was when George Bush commuted Scooter Libby's sentence. I just could not. I wasn't surprised that George Bush did that. You know, what I am surprised is he just didn't outright pardon him because they are so arrogant.
He may do that yet.
He will. But, you know, just didn't just fine, let's just pardon him because nobody's going to do anything about it. And nobody did anything about it. You know, the Democrats just let him get away with treason. I think that's treason. Scooter Libby was convicted for crimes of the administrative branch. And George Bush commuting a sentence is just, I think, blatant treason. And I'm just like so shocked and flabbergasted that he is still president. And I travel the world and that's what people say. You know, you elected him, but why is he still president? So that's what brought me back. And my friend that I've already spoken about a couple times, Reverend Lennox Yearwood, he was still in the ready reserve for the Air Force, and he was being charged with like being a threat to national security. And one of the reasons is because of his association with me. And he was going to have a hearing in Atlanta on July 12th, and he was going to start a march from Atlanta to D.C. And then that was like right at the time George Bush commuted Libby's sentence. So I just said, well, let's make it a real march. Let's really go from Atlanta to Washington, D.C. Let's get to D.C. Let's demand that something be done with these just blatant criminals and traitors that are running roughshod over our democracy. And so that's what brought me back. And I think really impeaching George Bush and Dick Cheney and holding them accountable for what they've done and what they've allowed to happen would be a service to humanity. And so I thought that fit really well in with my humanitarian goals. And now running for Congress, of course, is something completely different from what I was doing. I was so disgusted with politics. You know, one day I left the Democratic Party. The next day I left activism because I really, really was just flat out depleted and disgusted. But, you know, I just know I have to keep, and I got so many emails through all that time. But the emails from the people from Iraq and our soldiers and the families of soldiers were really, they like, you can't give up, Cindy. You have to keep fighting for us. And those are the ones that really broke my heart the most. So I know I have, you know, children. I hope to have grandchildren. And somebody has to be fighting for our kids.
Well, I'm glad. I'm sure everyone listening is glad that you recharge your battery so quickly and you're back in the midst of it. What is it going to take to rally Americans for impeachment or, as you mentioned earlier, to end this occupation?
Well, I think that, you know, we see the poll numbers are in favor of impeachment, and they're even more in favor of, you know, ending the occupation. But we don't see that many people, you know, out on the streets. We don't see that many people being activists. And I think it's a root cause. There's a couple of things that cause that. And one of them, I think, is, of course, the complicity of the corporate media in the crimes of the corporate Bush regime. And, you know, what's more important is what's in Anna Nicole's refrigerator when she died than, you know, people being slaughtered for no reason in Iraq, or people in Iraq, they don't have clean water, they don't have electricity, and it's like 135 degrees there. So, you know, that's, I think that's one of the problems. But another problem is that since the Reagan administration, there's been a really, what Tom Hartman calls the undeclared war on the middle class. And people have to struggle, you know, like I did before Casey was killed, working three jobs just to have health insurance. And when you're working three jobs, that doesn't leave a lot of time to get out on the streets to be active. And so I think that's what's happening. And people are so distracted with this, the cycle of consumerism that makes you work harder, that that really is very insidious. And there's was also an insidious thing starting with the neocons of doing away with the forced conscription, with the draft. It's not because they care about, you know, draft age males. What it was a concerted effort to keep war as far away from the average American as possible.
They've succeeded at that.
Yeah, absolutely. When so few people sacrifice, then there's not this public outcry like in Vietnam, which I think a lot of it was centered around the draft, particularly on campuses.
I mean, that is the weirdest thing about this war that we've been at now for 4 years, more than 4 years, that if you don't have a loved one like you do who's been injured or killed in the war, you can just carry on as though the war is not happening.
Or serving over there. When John Conyers said it was more important for him to elect a Democrat in 08, even if it was Hillary, that then end the war, I told him, I said, you know, there's about 160 mothers in this country who could care less who's president in 08. They just want their kid to come home 160, safely.
160,000 mothers.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. They just want their kid to come home safely from this mess. You know, so that's what it is. It's very few people have to sacrifice or even know. Right after Casey was killed, and I don't think I would find this too often now, but I had a T-shirt with his picture on it that had the date of his birth and the date of his death and said, in loving memory. And several people would say, who's that? And I would say, it was my son. It's my son, Casey. Well, what happened to him? I said, he was killed in the war. Three or four people told me, what war? Mm-hmm. And I said, what war do you think? You know, and so that is, I think that's the root cause of the problem. And people are so afraid of a draft, but I just look them in the face. I said, realistically, there's never going to be a draft because that really would be politically stupid. But then if everybody, well, more people had to sacrifice, there would be less wars.
How do you pierce this veil then, though? How do you get people who don't have a loved one over there or a loved one who's been injured or killed to take it seriously?
Well, you have to, there is an awakening. There is kind of a movement of people who are, and there's so many people, hundreds of thousands of people all over the country from, you know, here in Madison, Wisconsin, the great peace movement you have here. There's people who stand on bridges, you know, once a week, even in like minus zero weather, sub-zero weather. You know, there are people all over who care a lot, but it's not going to be until people are outraged enough to do civil disobedience, nonviolent civil disobedience on a massive scale that is going to really be able to change things. And I don't know what's going to, I just shudder to think what's going to pierce their veils to get them out onto the streets.
Unfortunately, we're out of time.
Oh, it was great talking to you.
Cindy Sheehan, it's been a real pleasure.
Thank you.
Today's program is available online at progressive.org. You can also write to us at 409 East Main Street, Madison, Wisconsin, 53703. Our music is by MUFA. Progressive Radio is produced by Elizabeth DiNovella and engineered at Audio for the Arts in Madison, Wisconsin.